Welcome to the About Sex podcast, where we discuss
toys and cars.
Well, some toys, but not cars, really, because we talk about sex.
Sex toys!
And my name is Josh, and with me, as always, is my lovely wife, Angela Skirtud. Tell us who you are, Angela.
I'm a licensed marriage therapist, and I'm an ASEX certified sex therapist. And today, our guest is Matthew Swango. I always want to say it really, really like overdramatic. So it's Matthew Swango, LMSW, program coordinator for St. Louis Effort for AIDS. Hey, Matthew.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Yes.
So tell us who you are. What are you here to share with us today?
So my name is Matthew Swango. I am the program coordinator for St. Louis Effort for AIDS, and I'm a licensed master social worker. And what I do is I go out into the communities and I share safer sex information. I'm also in charge of condom distribution. So all the little sites that you see, the bars and clubs and stuff in St. Louis that have those little condoms in there, mm-hmm. I'm the one who goes and drops those off.
They're just big like buckets of condoms.
Absolutely.
You're the bucket.
Don't
forget
the lube. I was going to say the condom fairy. Just leave them around. Yeah.
Just shower people with condoms.
I've been called a condom fairy before.
But I was like, is that okay?
Yes, it is. Trust me.
That's awesome.
Me too. I was totally blocking myself. I was like, Angela, is that politically correct?
It's okay.
It's okay. He'll allow it this time.
It's okay
this
if it's
time.
True. So
it's okay if it's true. Okay. Yes. Sure. Cool. So you drop condoms around and you teach people about safe sex.
I do that. I go into different places. I go into schools, programs for people who just got out of prison. Anybody mm-hmm. who will listen to me blabber on pretty much is who I'll go and talk to.
That's
and
awesome.
So I do that. I put on biopsychosocial programs for people who are living with HIV. And then I also do HIV and STI testing in the office and then also in an outreach setting. And then I do have a couple clients who I do therapy with as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
What is biopsychosocial? Well, go back to that.
Thank you for asking, Josh.
So what biopsychosocial is we want to empower people with tools to live an overall healthy life, take a holistic approach. So mm-hmm. we talk about biological, social, and then psychological factors that may impede having an overall healthy functioning. So we go mm-hmm. and teach people what they can do to make themselves better and work on, you know, the SMART goals and setting little goals that are attainable so that way bigger goals can happen.
Okay. So you're taking a holistic view of them as a person.
Absolutely.
Does it work?
It does work. And it's great to see people change and go from,
She's laughing at her own joke.
Laugh at myself all day. This is
my
life.
Too. Hey, you got to laugh. And especially whenever you're talking about sex and, you know, some people are like, oh, don't talk about that. And the big stigma that goes along with it, you got to have fun with it.
Yeah.
And especially in the prevention department, everything's almost a dirty joke. So we could talk about, you know.
Well, we should talk about.
Well, maybe we should talk about what are some of the dirty jokes that help people prevent bad sex or unsafe sex.
Yeah.
That would be bad sex. No. Here's a joke that we do in the prevention department, I guess. One of my coworkers, he brought probably the biggest, we call it a demonstrator at work, but it's a dildo.
And a demonstrator.
He brought the biggest one that I've ever seen.
I see that being a brand name for a dildo.
Yeah. The demonstrator.
Pretty much the size of my arm, my forearm, and it had a suction cup on it. So I wanted to surprise my boss, and it was around the holiday, so some people have mistletoe. So what I did is I took the dildo, and I put it up, and I suctioned it right in the doorway. And then whenever she went to turn the corner and walk, it almost smacked her in the head.
Oh,
and it was,
Merry Christmas! Yeah. Is it like a Christmas mistletoe, only with a dildo?
That's what I thought.
Kiss under the dildo or the demonstrator.
Yes, the demonstrator.
This makes me think of the Terminator, actually.
It'll be back, but
perhaps it's like a Terminator if you really use it.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, like, what are some of the classes you might teach?
So I teach a Life 101 program, and then that
Life
also,
101? Is that teaches people how to live?
Well, people who are positive, it's focused on that. And then it talks about, of course, medication adherence and being healthy, and it talks about drug usage. We go into that too, mm-hmm. because drugs and sex tend to be interlinked a lot.
Yeah.
And we also cover going to the doctor, how to prepare yourself, how to talk to other people. And then I talk about, I do a healthy relationships program. And mm-hmm. then what that does is it teaches people how to disclose. So,
yeah.
And it's good for not only disclosing HIV status, whether you're positive or negative, but also, like, you know, some people need to come out if you're gay and tell sex mm-hmm. partners about those types of things.
So, or if they have other STDs.
Absolutely. Or, talking about that. And yeah. We do a lot of that where I work too, having conversations about, you know, what do I do if I have a partner who has something? And then, you know, something that's common is people get the phone call from the health department saying, hey, you know, you may or may not have been. Yes.
Oh, no, you don't want that call.
Exposed to something. Yes. So, so we try to help people navigate yeah. through that yeah. and reduce the stigma, because a lot of people think that, you know, oh, I've got this phone call and I might have been exposed to HIV, or I might have been exposed to syphilis, gonorrhea, or chlamydia, or mm-hmm. any of the other STDs. But it's so common, especially in the St. Louis area, that we don't talk about it. People don't have the conversations, you know, that they should be having. People will go out to dinner and then they'll say, you know what, I had strep throat last week. Mm-hmm. But nobody ever says, hey, guess what? Last month I had gonorrhea.
I have not had that.
Never had yeah. that first date conversation.
Maybe it's not during the appetizer. It's yes. more of a dessert kind of thing. It's like, so on our way out, bye.
Yes. Just wanted you to know. Yes. Just wanted you to know. Have your tart.
Yes. We help people facilitate those conversations. And also,
so how would you facilitate that? How would you tell somebody?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah,
what's a good way somebody would get into that conversation?
Well, it
should
depends.
You do it at dinner in public?
I probably would not do it in public. That okay. would be a barrier that we talk
okay.
about.
Oh, okay,
so yeah,
okay.
so good triggers know. Would be something that would trigger you to reveal something, and then barriers would be something that would be put in the way. Okay. So we would discourage things like you know, crowded restaurants, or if you're at your mother's house and your partner oh. is there, and just different things like that. So you know, the person in the environment, in the setting, and you know, what would be the best environment for you to have this conversation.
So are you suggesting not Facebook?
Pretty no. much, yeah.
No, not a public post on yes. Facebook.
What?
Wait, do people do that?
I don't know how many likes it would get, but
it'd probably get a lot of the frowny faces yeah. that are crying.
Well, we've had a few family members who've come out as gay on Facebook, and yeah. I don't yeah. know if that's a bad one, actually. I no. think it was helpful to them, because the yes. people well, who are think, supporting actually yes. say, hey, good for you, and the ones who don't just don't mention yeah. anything. Yes.
Or they yes. get blocked.
Yeah. Well, yeah. luckily people are passive aggressive enough that they're not going to say it to your face. I hope.
Absolutely.
They probably come out to their immediate family members, and then it's more for everybody else. Like,
it's like,
here,
look,
I'll put it on
so
Facebook.
You know, yeah. as a side note.
Yeah. yeah. It's very empowering to do stuff like that yeah. and just say, hey, you know what? You know, this is me. You know, take it or leave it. Yep. And same mm-hmm. thing with the HIV status, that people want to say, you know, hey, I'm positive or I'm negative. Sometimes it feels a little bit like a double-edged sword, that mm-hmm. people who are negative are like, well, I don't really want to put it on Facebook because I don't want to make my positive friends feel bad,
oh, yeah.
you know, but it also, on the other hand, it encourages testing and being up to date with your sexual health. So we do encourage if they do want to put their status on Facebook, we also give away little cards that'll say, you know, negative and, you know, whatever. And then when you should come back and get tested again. But
oh, well,
it's kind of like when you
get
your
oil
change, they
yes.
put the sticker yeah. in your window.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that's so, really cool, actually. Yeah.
And people put that on Facebook, and it goes over quite well, I think.
That's cool. Huh. Yeah.
So how often should people be checking for STDs?
So it depends.
And who, of course,
yes,
you know.
Absolutely. So if you consider yourself to be a little bit more of high risk for sexually transmitted infections.
And what would that be? What's high risk?
I'm glad you asked that question. So according to the Center for Disease Control, if you've had more than one sexual partner in the past 12 months, mm-hmm. you're technically considered high risk.
Okay.
So we kind of broaden our term of high risk a little bit to where if you are engaging in sex with quite a few partners, and that's very subjective, you know, then you might want to get tested every 3 to 6 months. And then if you are maybe in a, you know, monogamous relationship, or I'll put it this way, if you only have one sexual partner, because we know that other things happen, mm-hmm. then you might want to go and get tested about once a year, just to make sure
just
that you're
case.
Up
because
to date
of infidelity.
Stuff.
I mean, yeah. I wrote a whole book on it this yeah. year. It does happen, and not that we want people to have
that. That would not be
that.
The way you want to find out.
It isn't the way you want to find yeah. out, but the reality yeah. is I don't know. I mean, you never know what happens, right?
Absolutely. Because you can't be with your partner 24/7. And we know that, you know.
No, I've tried.
Yeah. We like each other enough that we probably could.
No, no. She tries to spend 24 hours with me. And I'm like, I need a nap. Go
we
away.
Need space. Whatever, Josh. Well, no, but like, actually, that's a common thing after somebody has cheated for a partner to ask, like, before we have sex, I'd really like you to check on STDs so that I know I'm safe. And I think it's a perfectly fine request.
Yes. You know? If somebody's in that situation, what they could do is it takes 3 months for the antibodies to show up on a test for HIV. So you might want to get checked right whenever you find out for a baseline and then go back again 3 months later to get tested. But then for syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea, if you go in between maybe like a 4 to 6 week period of time to go get checked for those, they're pretty much going to show up.
Yeah.
And of course, with those,
so it can be 3 months before any tests can show that you have HIV.
Absolutely. So we have the test technology that we use. It's about a 95% accuracy rate in a 30-day period of time, but some people take a little bit longer to make those antibodies whenever they become exposed. So we have to have a 3-month window period there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Okay. Cool. Now we're going to talk about. No, I want to talk about commercial.
We were talking about how you have that conversation. So.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. We are actually talking about that too.
We got a little bunny trail.
I lost track.
Yeah.
So you don't have in a public setting. You don't do it on Facebook.
Yes.
Where do you do it?
Oh,
where's a good space
for
how?
I think
and what
that,
do you say?
Having that person alone, and each one of these instances is going to be tailored to the specific needs, because depending upon the relationship that the person has with the partner, is this person just a regular hookup that you have sex with? Is it somebody who you're in an intimate relationship with? So those conversations would look very different. And what I would encourage people to do if they do get a phone call like that is to just say, hey, I got a phone call. They didn't tell me the time period I might have been exposed. So it could have been any time. You know, because they try to trace back quite a while, so then that way they can.
That's a way of pulling the punch a little bit.
Yes.
You could be infected. You
could
not. You
be.
I hope you're
absolutely.
Not, but you never know.
Absolutely. So they just want everybody to go get tested. So framing it is, you know, had a former sexual partner, and potentially I could have been exposed, so I'm going to go get tested. And then I encourage you to go get tested too. Sometimes if there's domestic violence or something in those situations, and we may ask people to, like, why don't you pull back a little bit, go get tested yourself, find out what's going on, so that way you know your status and then whether that conversation is even warranted or not, because we wouldn't want people to put themselves in a situation.
Is it something you should talk about on a first date or when you're first dating? Because, I mean, I always think about, like, when do you bring up...
About if you're trying to date somebody new.
Yeah, like you're dating. And so it's like, I understand you want to disclose. It's important. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, what's it going to do? Is it going to make us have a good relationship? Are you going to just leave me? You know what I mean? And so when
people
do you bring it up
that,
when you're dating?
And that's a very tricky situation as well.
I figured.
So for gonorrhea and chlamydia and syphilis, I would probably get treated. If you haven't had sex with that person, you probably really don't owe them, you know, any explanation of, you know, you've had gonorrhea, chlamydia or whatever, because you're actively, you know, trying to treat it and get rid of it.
Don't have sex with them while you're infected, but it's something that's treated or treatable.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then for HIV, it kind of depends on the person. So some people like to disclose right off the bat because they put themselves out there and say, this is me. This is who I am. If you're comfortable with this, then we can continue. And some people like to get to know each other, maybe like the third date or something. So that way they can have time to bond and build a little bit of relationship with the person and figure out if this is a safe space to where I can disclose my status to.
Right.
And then
because you don't even know if you maybe want to have sex with them.
Yeah. So let's say you go on 50 dates a year and then you do it on the first time.
Somebody's
every
a really
time.
Good dater.
Yes. Yes.
Or on that's a lot of work.
On the internet a lot.
Yeah.
People can do it.
I know.
You're just swiping right on Tinder all day.
It's like, wow, that's a lot of time. But I can understand if I were single, maybe.
That's a lot.
It's 50 dates. You're like, that's a lot of effort, and it's a lot of dinners to pay for.
It is. It is. So coffee, meet for coffee. That
meet
way
for
it'll,
coffee. Yeah. Well, but
or
I would
meet
think then
park.
Maybe you don't have sex the first time you meet to wait, get to
that's
know each other.
That's probably a good plan in general.
And then you, if you wait till
some
the third date.
Some people have sex on the first date,
sure,
honey.
Sure, I know.
We had it sex happens. On our first date.
No, we did not.
Okay, we did. You don't remember? Although we were friends I knew for a while for beforehand. Like we had known each other for 3 months. So technically our first official date, I said I just wanted to be friends. So I didn't have sex with him on that date.
But we were hanging out.
We were hanging out.
And honestly, it wasn't our first official...
we were friends for 3 months.
Hold on. It wasn't our first official date. We just happened to have all our friends ditch us.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And we just ended up on a date together.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then we got drunk and we had sex. It was fate.
I'm so glad your dad doesn't listen to this.
I know, right? So I'm saying, you know, I could imagine, like, you know, maybe kind of keep a little sobriety. Don't have sex on your first date so that you're, like,
you just
making
tell
sure.
Our sex life to everybody.
Love it. We told that story on the show before.
I don't
you
think
know
we
it.
Did.
We have. Did we have. Yeah, we've told it.
Okay. Sounds good. Now you got me all blushing over here.
It's cute. That's because that's how he fell in love with me.
Oh, yeah, it was the sex. Is that what you're saying?
No. All right, so you don't do it on the first date, but you kind of try to put it out there as soon as possible.
Yeah. So that way, why build a relationship with someone and then be rejected after that? But I mean, again, that's a personal choice. Okay. So if someone wants to do that, they're more than able to do that. But sometimes it's a little more risky. And then if you're disclosing on the first date to everyone, then and you're doing 50 dates a year, you've just told your status to 50 people.
Right.
You know, so it's
that makes it
things to consider. And then in my healthy relationships program, we talk about, you know, the pros and cons and then triggers and barriers and things like that.
Okay. So, yeah. Cool. Interesting. So he does mention something that you were on some kind of commercial. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
So what was this commercial? So first it started out. How did it start?
Yes, I was way back in the day. No, I'm kidding. So basically I was in college and then they asked me to come and be part of a photo shoot. And there were probably about 10 other guys there. And we wanted to try to eradicate syphilis from the St. Louis area. And so we were there. We were taking pictures. Everybody was doing, you know, photo shoot stuff, you know, things you do there. And then I thought maybe they were going to, you know, put me in an ad with a whole bunch of other people. And then all of a sudden, I go to the office and somebody's saying, have you seen the commercial? And I say, what commercial?
Oh, no.
And and they said, well, it's being aired on TV over in Belleville. Oh, I saw it. So I thought, well, a lot of people are going to see that one. What the heck is going on?
What's
so
happening?
Then, they pulled it up on the internet and then they were talking about syphilis. And then all of a sudden, whatever says basically, you know, go get checked for syphilis, it pans right up to my face. And then my heart drops and then it starts beating very fast. And then I remember that episode of Friends where Joey Tribbiani is on there, and then he's trying to get a date, and then it's a herpes herpes advertisement, you know, on the big billboard, and then, you know, his jaw drops, and he's like, oh,
he becomes
crap.
The
you were
face
just the
for
most
herpes.
Photogenic. Yeah. So like, let's make him the face of it was gonorrhea,
syphilis.
You're the face of syphilis.
Yes.
How'd that work out
in the St. Louis area? So quite a few people saw it.
Did you complain to them or?
No, because they later hired me, so I didn't want to complain too much.
Wow,
that was nice of them.
It was. And then we used the same photo campaign for our little safe sex inserts, and then it's like, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'm a hand model now, so my hand is the one covering up the lips. So if you ever want to, you know, look at our stuff and the condom packets, I'm a hand model.
Nice. You've really reached an high level status here.
I'm gonna put that on my
resume.
And
it all started with syphilis.
Yes.
You're just like Joey. You're even a hand model.
# thanks syphilis.
Oh no. Don't think syphilis.
Me. It's funny. Oh my god. Oh man, I couldn't imagine that. But I mean, that's good though. Like one thing that's really cool is just you're so out about it and just so happy.
Yes.
I mean,
you've got to talk about it. And it's really great that you guys are doing this because we live in such a leftover puritanical society. Yeah. If we're not having these conversations about sex, somebody else is getting, you know, the kids on the playground and we hear all these like crazy rumors of, you know, do the jumping jacks, you won't get pregnant or whatever.
Yeah.
And like the earwax test. Have you guys ever heard of
the earwax test?
So I learned this probably in the past couple of years and somebody else reminded me of it. So basically, if you're in the middle of having sex with someone, the myth is that you could go in your ear and pull out some earwax and then put it on a woman's vagina. And then if it bubbles or anything, then she has a sexually transmitted infection. If there's no bubbling or anything that takes
place,
apparently it's fine. So
it'll never bubble.
I know. It will never bubble. Or hopefully it won't be bubbling.
If not, she's boiling of some sort.
Then we need to take her to the doctor for a completely different reason.
Yeah. I got some exorcism stuff going on.
Maybe
there.
She's being burned because she's a witch or something.
Yeah.
No.
I think her vagina is possessed.
That's another puritanical thing happening. Absolutely. No, I mean, it doesn't happen now, but it used to happen.
So that is a myth that doesn't work. Yes, so don't put earwax on your vagina.
We should learn more myths. I know you talked to, like, where I learned about some of what you did is at Foam, my speaking engagement a while back. So, like, you talked about all the different myths. So what are some myths people need to know about safe sex?
Yes, another one that we touched on that night was condoms. So basically, the lambskin condom, people like to use it because there's more heat transfer and it feels more like what some people say natural sex. Yeah, skin.
Right.
And but what happens is the HIV virus is smaller than what sperm is. So HIV can penetrate through that membrane and sperm will not. So it will stop pregnancy, but it will not stop HIV transmission.
How is that still? How are they still selling those then? That doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know. I've never bought one just because I thought it would be awkward to put my penis in something that was in a lamb. Yeah. So
we don't want to fuck sheep.
I knew a client who was using the lamb skin because they're actually allergic to the latex.
Oh, yes.
So that's why some people are using
There's an alternative to latex and lambskin. There's another.
Yes.
I forget what the...
It's like polypurifluorine or some weird name.
It's kind of like what they use for the gloves.
Yes.
You know, for people who are latex allergies.
Yeah, because I mean, that's why. I mean, I know some people are like, oh, we want the real feel, but sometimes it's actually a latex allergy.
Yeah. If you have latex allergy, but there's another alternative.
Yes, and it feels kind of like the lunch lady glove, you know what I mean?
So it's not as good of a texture.
No, not as much stretch, and it's a little bit thicker, so there's not going to be as much heat transfer. So,
okay. So that's why. But so like if you are worried about HIV, then avoid the lambskin so that, you know, you are protected.
Absolutely.
But that's why we have the other condoms. Are there any other myths we should know about in addition to condoms?
Well, one myth I think, so there's pre-exposure prophylaxis. And what a myth has been
is
a pill that you can take before you become HIV positive. So if we want to think about it in terms of, you know, drawing, parallels to things that we already know, it's kind of like birth control for HIV. There's also the morning after pill for HIV. Okay. So another myth that I like to talk about is people say, well, if people take this pill, then what's going to happen is people are not going to use condoms. So people are scared of that. And sexually transmitted infections will be on the rise. Well, it is on the rise. And what I believe the reason is because people are going in now every 3 months. So if you have to go and get tested every 3 months more often because you're, you know, kind of highly sexually active, then you're going to be able to identify any type of infection sooner, you know. So we're going to catch these infections. And hopefully, since we're being able to treat these infections, it's going to start to go down. So it hasn't really escalated a lot. It's escalated just a little bit. But
you think
not,
it's because more testing?
Well, that and absolutely. Yeah. People are access to healthcare. So these people were going in, you know, once every 6 months, every year or whatever. And now they have to go in every 3 months in order to stay on this pill.
So to take the prophylaxis, you have to get tested every 3 months.
Every three months.
Which then that means that the rates are going to show up higher.
Yes. Absolutely.
So it's not, that's one of those like correlation, not causation kind of things where people are like, oh, because people are doing this, this is why it's higher. And it's no, actually, we're just able to catch it quicker.
Absolutely.
But it's early enough. They probably need to study it more to know exactly why.
Because they say that, well, you know, people are just going to give up condoms if they, you know, start taking this pill. But we know the truth is the research is there. And only 17% of men who have sex with men, so gay, bisexual, and other people are, you know, other men who are having sex with men, they're only wearing it for over a 3 to 4 year period. It's only, they're only participating in condom using condoms for 17% of the time.
That is really low.
So that's really low. So whenever people say, well, people are just going to give up condoms, people aren't really using condoms a lot anyway. Mm-hmm. So we need to meet people where they are and give them the tools to stay HIV negative.
That's like 83%
absolutely
not.
And it's on the decline.
So you might as well give them the pill.
Yes, and these studies are before PrEP came out. So it's not like we, you know, were taking this after we give people the pills. It was before, you know, people had access to these pills. And then condom usage is staying about the same.
Yeah.
So we're not seeing a big drop in condom usage if people are, you know, using PrEP. But people weren't really using condoms a lot anyway.
That surprises me that that's so low.
Absolutely. Like,
that's a very low number.
Well, if you think, so I'm not thinking of people who are always dating, but I am thinking of people who are in long-term relationships. Most people, when they're in a relationship with somebody for a long time, they don't want to use a condom the whole time. They start, absolutely. You want it to be, I mean, like even in, well, it doesn't matter how you're defined. Everybody, you're when you're long-term in a relationship, you just want to stop using condoms and be able to bang. You know what I mean? And so it doesn't. It doesn't seem that odd to me. I think it would be weird if I were in that dating pool and not using the condoms. But, like, I mean, you know, it's each his own. And plenty of people have said they like sex without condoms. And that's a big piece of it.
People like sex without condoms.
Yes, Josh. People this like just sex in. Without condoms. I encourage you if you're dating and you're unsure to use condoms. Yes. But the reality is that's why people don't, you know. At least one reason.
Honestly, don't like how it feels.
Because it feels nice.
I would also encourage people to research, do look on YouTube or whatnot to find out how condoms work, because we have what I believe is a false sense of security, and we think that condoms are like 99.9% accurate. Mm-hmm. So that's very true in a laboratory setting. So if we set this up in a, you know, a scientific experiment, they're going to be very, very, very effective.
You have a banana. Yes. Everybody's putting it on, and you see it's correct, and then you shoot the sperm through the banana, and it's so safe.
Yes.
But that's in a laboratory,
in real life, what can go wrong?
That's how we test it, apparently.
So tons of things can go wrong. I don't know if you've ever tried to read the expiration date of a condom.
It's always expired.
Yeah. Well, I can help with that. But
always. They expire so fast.
But it, you can't hardly see it.
Where are you buying your condoms, Josh?
There's a guy.
The clearance section.
He just drops it. Some guy drops it at our house.
It's Dollar Tree.
Okay.
You get like 20 in a pack for a dollar.
All right. So first expiration dates can be wrong if you're not using it within the appropriate time frame.
Absolutely. And then if you're drunk, you can't see that. So
no, you can't read when you're drunk. No.
User error is what you're talking about. What's going on?
So is most of it user error?
It's user error. People keep them in their cars and their wallets. And they can't get hot. So what the research
was. Oh, if they get hot, it can damage it?
You are not supposed to
microwave
over 100 degrees. Don't do that.
Don't microwave it. Why are you microwaving it?
I like it a little warm.
Some flavored ones. Oh, no. Get it prepared.
Yeah, you got to prep it.
Oh, you guys keep breaking me. I don't know what to do. Okay, so don't microwave your condom. What else?
Don't microwave it. Yes. Don't open it with your teeth or your nails. So those are some more common things.
Okay.
And
your teeth
don't or nails. Because that'll make little holes and you won't know that you're scratching it. Yeah. So
wow, there's so many rules. I can't use condoms.
There are a lot. That's why they're only condoms actually in a real world setting for vaginal sex are about 85% effective, and then for anal sex are about 75% effective. So that's way different than what we think of the 99% you know, effectiveness rate that we think of what condoms can do. So that's why you know, people can also partner PrEP with condoms, so that a way they can have a greater, you know, assurance that perhaps it won't become HIV positive or transmit HIV.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking one other way that it could happen is if you bought one condom like when you were 13 and then you're finally getting to have sex, but maybe it's like 5 or 6 years later and the condom is terrible and gnarly. You know, that's what I would imagine it to look like. It'd probably after five be expired. To 6 years.
Yeah. And then also the heat from your body. So condoms can't be stored above 100 degrees. So your body's already 98.6. So whenever you put it in your wallet, it acts as an insulator.
Raises the temperature.
People were like, well, I don't want to keep it in my wallet because I'm not supposed to do that. So they'll keep it in the glove box. But then the greenhouse.
It's 120 degrees in there. Yeah.
Yes. It absolutely goes over 100.
So, and this is not to discourage people from using condoms. No. But what it is to say is that, you know, even
where should you store them?
Well, yeah. Where should you store them? But the big thing is that, like, condoms still can still prevent pregnancies and STDs. But you need to also be smart in how you use them. You need to pay attention to condoms and their expiration dates, and you need to store them safely where? Not in your pocket?
Well, I would...
So let's say you're at the club.
I'm at the club, I'm dancing.
and you're dancing with your partner, and you're like, hey, we're going to go have sex soon. Where do you keep it?
What I advise people is, well, a woman could always keep it in her purse if she has something to protect it, because women keep pens and keys and all those other little
switch blades.
Oh, my God, all the things.
Yeah, so.
It's got a switch.
And okay. So you could do that. Or what I like to do is maybe people can have like a bowl by their nightstand and then have the condoms there. You can have the lube there. So if you go out to the club and you're having fun, you bring somebody home and then you're in the bed, it's already right there. Right, so you've got your little
candy dish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, why don't you pick something? Yeah. I like it. Then it's sexy.
Yes.
Like, just how many people are you bringing back here? Uh-huh. Enough to be good in bed, honey.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, but now that's important for people to know, because I have, so like one of the things that is very important to me is like comprehensive sex education, especially for teens as they're growing up, because what abstinence-only education is, they sometimes are putting scientifically inaccurate information out there.
Yes.
But one thing that is, I guess, kind of the way they're saying it, that's kind of true, but also like has a little turn to it, is that condoms aren't 100% accurate.
Yeah. They're not.
And that is true.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we can't use them to protect ourselves.
Correct.
that doesn't mean, oh, screw condoms.
No.
That's like saying a seatbelt will only save your life 50% of the time. Who knows?
But why, we should just scrap seatbelts.
But you should just do...
No, absolutely.
No, I'd rather have a 50% chance of living.
I'd rather have a better chance of living or having safe sex.
And if you find out how to use them accurately, then it will be above that 75 to 85% effectiveness rate. So, you know, arm yourself with the information.
Yeah. That way then, so it's like basically don't throw the baby out with the bathwater here.
Absolutely.
Why are you throwing babies?
Well, I know. I have a wet, critically injured baby now. Yeah. What happened?
Look what you did. You injured a baby and got it wet.
That's what the point is. Don't throw the baby. You throw the bathwater out.
So we talked about condom usage. Are there ways other than penetrative sex to get an STD or get HIV specifically?
Absolutely. Well, HIV specifically, so HIV is a delicate virus, and then what we have been left with is the images in our head that we think of, you know, the gay white men in New York who are in the hospital beds, and we see the pictures of them in the paper, and they're, you know, all the facial wasting, and, you know, people look like skeletons. So that's kind of where we are, you know, left with, and then that builds a stigma. And then so we think that HIV is this big, scary thing that everybody should be afraid of, whenever, in fact, it's a delicate virus. Transferring is kind of difficult, but easy at the same time. So anal sex would be the number one way, and that's just because the biologically, the way that your body's set up. So HIV can't infect every cell, but it can infect the CD4 cells. So those are your immune system cells, and they live in your gut. So your gut, of course, is attached to your butt. So that's why it's so much easier.
I learned so many things.
Yeah. And this sperm swim, you know, the
gut is attached to your butt.
Yes. So if let's say that no prevention methods were taking place. So we can prevent HIV by someone being undetectable, and then also condoms, pre-exposure prophylaxis, and post-exposure prophylaxis. If none of those measures are in place and somebody just has, you know, random sex with somebody who has HIV and unmedicated, and let's say that they bottom, which is the highest, you know, thing that you can do to contract it, and then so
bottom is basically where you're receiving anal sex. Absolutely. Josh was like, what's bottom? And maybe some of our listeners don't know either.
Sorry.
So it's okay.
Thank you. Thank you. And then so basically,
what's a bottom? Yeah. No, it's okay.
I'm not as versed on anal sex.
I'll break it down. So basically, if you get cum in the butt,
somebody comes inside your butt, okay,
then you have about a 1 in 70 chance of contracting HIV.
Okay.
So that's the highest. All right. And then.
And that's with knowing that the other partner has HIV.
Has HIV. And unmedicated, you know, no prep, no treated, PrEP, no condoms, no. You know, treatment,
so 1 in
no
7.
Nothing. Yeah, 1 in 70.
1 in 70.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a delicate virus.
Yes. So
it only makes 1 in 70. That's interesting.
Outside
I thought it was more
the body, it'll die. And then air temperature change, saliva neutralizes it. So all those things will make it so that HIV
kind of
dies.
So oral sex?
So oral sex, yes. So that is, the CDC will say that receiving a blowjob from somebody who's HIV positive is pretty much zero. Mm-hmm. So they won't ever say zero for anything. No. So they'll do that like little squiggly line, zero, you know. And then for somebody who is giving oral sex to someone who's HIV positive, technically it is possible, but extenuating circumstances have to happen. So let's say that the person is unmedicated and then you just went and had oral surgery and then you
have open wounds.
Yes.
Why are you giving oral sex after oral surgery?
It's a treatment. One of the ways to manage the pain.
Do you still have like the cotton balls back there?
You never know.
You're like, bring it over here.
I mean, hey, if people go to the emergency room for light bulbs in their butt, people will do anything.
I guess so.
That's true. But if you're giving oral sex, it's actually a pretty low chance too, unless there's some sort of cut or
like open wound. So you have to have an open wound or something like that.
But for the other STDs, HIV, is a risk, right?
What about if they get it in your eye?
That's not really a good transmission.
No, it won't transmit.
Okay.
Good to know.
So come in everybody's eye, guys. Yeah. You're fine. I know you've always wanted to do this. The more
you broke me. Oh, I love it.
It's my PSA. Come in people's
eyes. Just take
it
in the eye. You're good to go.
So what about the other STIs?
So the other STIs would be...
This has been a weird one, huh?
Syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea. And so what people, again, with, you know, the condom usage or whatever, people are like, oh, well, everybody's going to get STDs or STIs because of, you know, no condoms are being used. But a lot of people don't know that you can get it from a blowjob anyway. So whenever you go get tested.
You get gonorrhea?
Yes, gonorrhea. Gonorrhea and chlamydia you can get from blowjobs because they're site specific is what we call it. So if somebody goes and pees in a cup, then we don't know if you've got it in your throat or else if you've got it in your butt. Huh. So you have to get tested.
They have
in
to
all
test
the places.
All the different places. Yeah. To
see. Oh, okay. So it could be here, all of them. It could not be in some place.
Will it show up on a blood test?
Absolutely. No. It's you could get the swab thing where they swab the vagina or they take it and shove it up their urethra.
Yeah, that hurts. Yes. Yep. Oh my God.
It does hurt.
That is so painful. I didn't know they still did that.
We don't at our office. We do pee in the cup. So that's a good way to test for that. And then so that could be transferred through oral sex or basically any type of sex. And then also if somebody's masturbating someone and they get some of the juices on their hands, and then you could get gonorrhea in the eye,
you know,
stuff like that. Yeah, because it's a mucous membrane. So
So don't come in somebody's eye.
Well, correct. Yes, correct. You could get gonorrhea.
Sorry, guys. Yes. I have to retract the earlier PSA.
So gonorrhea, treatable, yes. There is a little bit of myth out there to where, I don't know if you've ever heard of the drug-resistant gonorrhea, all of the articles that have been floating around.
A little bit, yeah.
Somebody who was, he was a holistic doctor, you know, prescribed like, you know, herbs and things like that to people. But he wrote an article and said that gonorrhea was going to be worse than HIV. I thought, well, how in the hell is that going to happen? You know, because, you know, it's just, it's not.
It's not.
So basically, people are scared of drug-resistant gonorrhea is what they call it. But what happens is if we can't treat it with the first line of treatment, we can treat it with the second. So there's not really going to be a case where somebody is, you know, going to just be out of options and your penis is going to be dripping and burning for all of eternity. It's not.
Right.
Yeah. Goodness.
Or your eyeball.
Yes, absolutely.
I was so worried.
Why are you so worried?
PSA, you're like, back on. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes. So those,
you're funny.
Yes, those, the pee in the cup's a good way to get tested for gonorrhea and chlamydia. And then syphilis and also herpes, those can be spread by skin-to-skin contact. And also HPV. So we want everybody to get vaccinated for HPV. Check the recommendations. They've raised the recommendations for some people. I know for men who have sex with men, they've changed that to 26. The insurance will cover it. Mm-hmm. But then that can...
Why don't they cover it after 26?
Because they think that if you've had more than like 8 or 10 sexual partners, you probably had HPV, which is true.
Really?
So, yes, HPV, a lot of people, HPV is the number one sexually transmitted infection that there is. There's over 300 kinds. Mm. So, yes, if you've had like 8 to 10 sexual partners, you probably had some form of HPV, but the body will expel that within about a 2-year period of time.
It's not a permanent?
sometimes it does stick around and it can lead to things like anal cancer and things, you know. Okay. So,
or cervical cancer. Yeah,
is it, that's the one that causes cervical cancer.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Which is why it is important for people to just get immunized for it, because then you can prevent it, you know.
Yeah, a lot of people, like, same thing with, we were talking about condoms. They said, oh, I don't want to give my kid that vaccine, and then they'll think they can go have as much sex as they want. I'm sorry, I'm going to give my daughter that as soon as they let me.
Yeah.
Well, like,
I don't want her to ever have to deal with that.
We need to put it out there that that's a leap in logic, okay? So, like,
it's false logic.
It's if I do this, then flawed. This sudden big thing's going to happen. And the reality is, no, you're still going to educate your kids.
And
you're
your
still
kids are still going
to teach them
have
your
sex.
Values. Yeah. And some of them are still going to have sex.
All
and
of
most
them.
Of the people who want you to be abstinent had sex before they got married, too.
Yeah.
Just want to throw it out there. It was pretty common.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In the older generation, they also had sex
they before. Did. They
Even
did.
Even though they talk about all these young kids.
Everyone I talked to, they're like, yeah, we couldn't wait, but we sure tried.
Mm-hmm. And they're still getting it on. The nursing homes have a lot of STDs and stuff in there.
Yeah.
So they're still getting
Because they think, oh, we're old, we don't have to worry if we get infected, we're gonna die anyway.
Yeah.
It's like,
which
it's like
condoms
I'm 90.
There too,
no,
the
you
way.
Need lots of condoms.
Condoms
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Sounds
That's
good.
That mindset when you get older
is.
Where you're like, I don't care. It's higher risk.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you're a teenager and you're over 80. You're like, eh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and so, but going back to the leap in logic, it's not that educating people, preventing STDs, or helping people make better decisions causes people to have more sex. That's a leap in logic.
It is.
No.
It doesn't cause people to be shameless about their sex either, although I encourage you to be as shameless about your sexuality as you like, because I do want people to love themselves as sexual people.
Got it. Bunny trail.
No, but no, because it's important too. But the point is that, no, these things just help prevent things like STDs and unwanted pregnancies, and they help prevent people from making decisions that they regret later.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't understand the mindset where people hear, oh, this thing will help prevent an STD. And then they automatically think, oh, that's going to cause STDs, or that's going to cause more other problems. It's like wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
How is a helmet going to hurt you?
And it's absolutely not true. So we know in countries where they talk about sex, and then the STD rates are low. STI
they
rates.
They talk about sex in other countries.
Absolutely.
What? Sometimes, wait,
like
which
in
countries?
France and Sweden, all the.
What about Italy?
I asked about Italy, and in Italy they said, we're Italian, we don't have to talk about sex. They still have a very strong Roman Catholic influence.
Yeah, they do have the Catholics
and
there.
So they do talk about sex among each other, but not in more of an institutionalized form. So there are some challenges with Italy.
So how do they talk about sex more there, like in France?
I'm
like,
actually not sure, because that's not my specialty, but I know that they start at a young age, like at kindergarten. They talk about the, you know, intimacy and whatnot. What does that mean to be intimate with people without even, you know, going into the sexual act, so that it's kind of building.
Right.
And then we know that the STI rates are lower, teen pregnancy is lower, you know, so abstinence only does not work because, you know, our rates of teen pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections are astronomical compared to these other countries.
When they're doing comprehensive sex education and just making it an open conversation.
Wow. That's awesome.
No, it's
we
a big
should
difference.
Do that here.
It's a big difference when you teach people how to be safe.
Yes.
It really is.
People are so insecure talking about sex.
Oh, I know.
They are.
Like, anytime you bring up any sex at all, people are just like, why would you talk about that?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, dude.
We should never be shamed for something that we're biologically programmed to do.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Well, it basically creates a war within yourself.
Right, yes.
And that's what I do, is help people figure out that war.
As long as it's among consenting adults.
That's important. Well, and that's, you know, even with my infidelity book, that's partly why that is a problematic behavior, is that not every adult there is consenting, you know? Like, if a bunch of people are having an orgy and they're all consenting, like, have at it, people, you know? But that's the difference, is they're all having these conversations. And the interesting thing to me is when people have, let's say, more alternative and wilder lifestyles, they tend to actually be better at communicating about sex and advocating for safety, and even talking about STDs beforehand. Like, we had a person on here just months ago, Kevin Patterson, who said, I know if I'm having an STD conversation, I'm about to get busy. And I was like, that's hilarious, but it's
great.
True.
Yes. Yes. And it's with the myth of people are like, oh, well, you should go test, pardon my language, you know, the hookers or whatever, we call them sex workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but they think that, you know, they're the ones out there spreading all the HIV and sexually transmitted infections to everyone. But they're way more up on their sexual health than the general public, because this is their business.
Yeah.
You know, if you start giving people sexually transmitted
infections, you're not going to have
return customers. You got to keep the merchandise nice.
Absolutely. So they learn things and share information with each other, too. Mm-hmm. I think it's called like cheeking or tonguing or something, to where what they'll do is they'll put a condom on the side of their mouth and then they'll go down on someone. So whenever they give a blowjob, they're actually like putting a condom on somebody their mouth. And a lot of times people can't even really tell that it's there. Hmm. So it's,
and they're protecting themselves and they're protecting you.
Absolutely.
Careful not to choke on the condom.
Yeah.
That would get lost in the back of your throat.
They get so good at it. See, it's, just,
skill you got to learn, I guess.
It is. Practice, practice.
Well, maybe that's what we should do for better condom usage, is just teach people how to cheat.
Yeah.
Like, oh, how did that get on there?
Oops, you're protected.
We can hold classes. Yeah.
That's funny.
And then talking about that, so there's flavored condoms, and then so flavored condoms should not go inside the body, okay?
Oh, okay.
So a lot of people don't know that.
And I
then
didn't know that.
It's because it's sugar-based, so women will probably know what happens whenever sugar-based.
Get a yeast infection.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Or bladder, both. Yes. They can infect us on both sides.
Also, don't put ice cream in there.
Yeah.
Same. Why do you keep doing that, Josh? Totally a joke, guys.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Yeah,
continue, though.
same with flavored lube. So has a sugar base, don't put that in the body as well. That's for masturbation or licking off your partner or whatnot.
And it's terrible, too. It's so sticky.
Oh, they're so useless. I hate those lubricants. They taste so gross.
I think we used it once, and we were like,
this is nasty.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
If people did want to put a flavored condom in their body, I call them diet condoms and diet lube. So if you read, the package, it's going to say aspartame in there. So, but then that's how you know that it's not flavored with a sugar-based sweetener. So if you're in a pinch, and then you can,
those are safe to put in
like that. Yes.
Interesting.
So if it's diet lube and diet
aspartame
condom,
tastes terrible.
Oh, I hate that. I do. I hate it. Yeah. Even we have this. My mother-in-law had sent us this jelly, but she got us a diabetic jelly, and I was like, "Why does this taste so terrible?" Oh, because I cannot stand the
diabetics
diet stuff.
Always give you sugar-free crap.
Please stop giving me sugar-free stuff. I love sugar. I want it all over
my
body.
I have dessert Fridays every Friday and treat myself.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's about moderation, right?
Well, I don't moderate on Fridays.
No.
It's like 2,000 calories.
That'll work.
That's a great rule. I don't moderate on Fridays.
Yeah, people have their cheat days.
Yeah.
No, of course.
And Friday, a lot of times you go out.
It's so all chocolate. 2,000
yes,
calories
but you're
of chocolate.
Saying if you're having sex.
That's a lot of chocolate.
It is.
But don't cheat on your condom. Do a diet condom.
Yeah. The more you know.
Well, this is all really great information. Wow. What else do we need to know? Are there
so
any
what are
other
some other
or,
sexual yeah. risk reduction techniques?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Is that what we're already talking about?
Yeah. So we can, using a lot of lube is important. So we know what happens is micro tears, especially with anal sex. Mm-hmm. Then we want to make sure that there's a lot of lube, because then that reduces the friction, reduces tearing, and it also kind of coats it a little bit too. So it's less likely to.
Probably feels better too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. And then we talk to a lot of people who are on meth, and it dries out. It's always an interesting conversation.
It dries out the mucous membrane.
Well, the penis and the vagina. Or?
A lot of people on meth aren't very hydrated, so I don't know if that plays into it too.
Yeah, that's
but
they're too busy doing meth to drink water.
Meth sex sessions tend to last a very long time.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to dry out on its own. Is pretty much the reason why. They can go for hours, like all night long, and because it kind of reduces the urge. And meth is kind of one of the scary things that's been introduced, and it's really taking a toll and making the HIV rates skyrocket.
Oh, that's
so
too bad.
So that's why comprehensive and holistic approaches help, you know, reduce the chances of HIV transmission, whether you're positive or negative. So if we're helping to tackle that drug use and get that, you know, under arrest, then hopefully that'll stop HIV transmission.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay.
So extra lube.
Condoms. Especially if you're taking meth.
Yes.
That explains 1995 entirely for me.
No.
I was actually a teenager then, or maybe even younger, who knows?
You were a teenager.
I was 82, born in 82. So anyhow, no, whatever.
Okay, thanks for sharing your birthday.
You can reduce an amount of number of partners. So we know that some people don't like to use condoms at all. So if you've got, you know, 30 sexual partners in the past 6 months, maybe you
that's
can go
lot.
Down... Some people it is. And then
is it? Okay.
And then, no, and we don't want to shame.
No, right. No, there's no shame there. There's
it's
just more
he's excited to learn.
When I say, oh, it's more like
the time really? Investment.
That's a
that
lot of
into
work
into that. Yeah,
to get that many partners.
It is a lot of work. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but hey, all power to you, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's somebody who's really good at hooking up.
I remember.
They're really handsome or pretty.
Yes. There was one person I remember who had pretty much a partner for every day of the year. And then these are different partners. I thought, you know, does this person work or whatnot? But
yeah, anyways, how do they get the time?
It takes a lot of time, I'm sure. I have no clue. But
plus, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But reducing the number of partners. And then also, you know, some people, we know that, you know, a lot of people aren't using condoms. So increasing condom usage. If you've used condoms for 40% of the time in the past 12 months, if you can go up to 50% of the time or 60%, that's going to reduce your risk as well. Yeah. So we want to make sure that we meet people where they are, honestly, you know, because having the shameful conversation of wear a condom every time or don't have sex at all or whatever, you know, that's almost like abstinence only. So it, you know, people are like, well, that, you know, I messed up once.
They think it's all or nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of the abstinence.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yep.
So no, it's okay to mess up. It's okay to make mistakes. You just have to try.
What you're describing is actually harm reduction.
Yes. Harm reduction.
Which
absolutely.
Is, no, like every time we, well, it actually goes into the alcohol model too, but like anytime we drink, anytime we do drugs, anytime we have sex, anytime we ever do something that potentially puts us at risk, smarter choices every time. And just because you make a mistake one time doesn't mean you have to keep making the same mistake or you're like forever broken.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right? You can still find ways to reduce your risk.
Yeah, reduce. Yeah. Yeah. And you'll see that like with alcohol, for example, harm reduction techniques can be, you know what? I am going to take an Uber instead of drive my own car to a bar. Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Right? No, it's just an example.
It is. Nobody
it's
does that here.
A small change that you can make to protect people around you when you're drinking. Or I'm going to walk to the bar if you're close enough to.
Yes.
So just examples. The same thing can be happened with
sex. This is
St.
Louis. Nobody walks here.
That would really be nice walking.
Especially in the county.
I think you can get a ticket for biking drunk too, though.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Because it is still considered a vehicle on the road.
Yeah.
You're like,
you get a DUI with a lawnmower tractor too.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
And with a boat. You can also get DUI with a boat. Because you can hurt people with
it. If it's in the back of the truck or if it's in the boat.
And probably with a plane too, but I just don't know that many pilots.
Just park the boat.
Yeah, you lose your pilot's license with that one. That's not a good thing.
I'm going to go fly to Spain.
We're going to California, everybody. Everyone get in.
Autopilot.
There you go. That's the reality. It's all Google cars
it's
in the sky
a little safer
now. It's a lot easier. We need the Google car.
But please don't drink and fly.
Don't drink and fly, everybody. That's too many PSAs, Angela.
I didn't. Yeah, I was just.
Something else you mentioned here is serodiscordant relationships. What is that?
Yeah. So what that is whenever one partner is HIV positive and then another partner is HIV negative. Some people think that they can only have sex with people or relationships with people who are of the same status as them. Mm-hmm. But so this is an interesting bit of information. So what happened is they had they did two huge studies and they had thousands of people who were part of this, and then they participated in like hundreds of thousands of sexual acts, and then one partner was positive, one partner was negative, and nobody in either one of the studies transmitted HIV to their partner if they had an undetectable viral load. And how someone gets an undetectable viral load is by taking their medicine. So if they have HIV suppressed
with
then,
the prophylaxis?
No, with HIV treatment.
Okay.
So just regular pills for HIV. So if they take their medication long enough and well enough to where it has HIV under arrest, they're not going to transmit HIV to their HIV
lower transmission rates.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
so
it's like managed.
Yes.
HIV.
So if it's managed, it can be controlled and not spread.
Yep.
So it's become more like a chronic
still use
medical
a condom.
Condition
Absolutely.
That people can live with.
Absolutely.
And that was with out protection?
That is without protection. So
they were doing it without protection.
They didn't
in the
use
study.
No prep, no PEP, no condoms, stuff like that.
That's
so,
a roll of the dice.
So
there.
Yeah, so they participated in it, and then what they really wanted to do was they found, you know, a lot of gay men were saying that, well, I've had sex with my HIV positive partner, but he, you know, hasn't given it to me. So they wanted to take that real world situation and turn that into research. So they had huge studies, you know, proving that, you know, nobody got HIV. The disclaimer of this is that six people did contract HIV, but they did something that's called a genotype and phenotype testing. And then so they found out that they got HIV from somebody else other than their primary partner. So they didn't get it from their partner who was in the study because they didn't have the same strain.
So somebody else who was not being treated possibly.
Correct.
So treated HIV, it's a lot safer.
Yeah, you're not going to give it. And then I do know some infectious disease doctors here in the St. Louis area that if one partner is positive and one partner is negative and they go to the doctor and say, I'm here with my positive partner and I want to get PrEP, the doctor sometimes refuses that because they say that it'll just kind of cancel each other out and there's no point in putting, the one partner on pre-exposure prophylaxis if the partner's HIV is already under control by being undetectable.
But they might have another partner, so.
Correct.
So you should still have it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and something about this to kind of keep in mind is that that means that you can live a reasonably healthy life and happy life with HIV being HIV positive.
How controlled is HIV now? What is on a day-to-day life? We have those images from the 80s and 90s of people in bed with the ashen
then the
face.
Scars on their face.
So is that
right?
Is that the reality of HIV now, or has it changed?
It's a little bit different because we have those images of stigma that we've seen and grew up with, and then that's what we relate HIV to. But then we also have images now for people who are HIV positive of drug manufacturers trying to sell their drugs, and then you see people these hot guys with their shirts off going they're just living this wonderful lifestyle, I'm about to go jet skiing and all this stuff. So that's
you mean
what,
like the herpes commercials?
Yes, that,
where you always jet ski when you have herpes.
People with STDs always look like they are so happy on TV. That's the great thing about those commercials. They're the happiest people. They're living their life jogging and
So people, whenever they become diagnosed, they're kind of caught what does this look like for me? Am I supposed to,
those are two extremes.
Laying in the hospital bed so they tend to try to find them place. Where am I with this? So try to help them navigate that is a little bit tricky sometimes. But we want to push people towards being healthy and happy, but then sometimes people get frustrated whenever they're not there right away.
Well, so how do people work through that? Because while people are having manageable, healthy lives, I'm sure that at times it's difficult to find out that you're HIV positive. Yes. So what is that process like for a person?
So I believe that it's, I use kind of the grief model, the DABDA of therapist talk, So there's denial, anger, bargaining, acceptance, and all those good things that go on.
So do a lot of people can feel like a death sentence. It's that fear they get when they have a diagnosis.
That's still scary.
It's an incurable disease. Yeah. You're going to have it the rest of your life. Yeah. So it's kind of scary.
I mean, I've had people bust out and cry before. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people cry.
I think I would.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, there's a lot of times whenever people think, I've had a potential exposure, and then I know my partner hasn't been taking his medication. So some people have already kind of geared themselves up for the news. So it's a little bit less dramatic for them. And then some people shut down. So some people will say, I know one time a person just pulled out a book and started reading it. I've had
While they were sitting right in front of you.
Yeah,
they're just like, "Oh, that's good news."
And then some people said,
shut down.
My landlord's here. I gotta go. And then was ready to walk out the door. We're like, "Wait a minute. Do you understand what this means?"
They just can't deal with that reality.
Absolutely. I've had clients pass out when they're dealing with too much grief. Yeah. Physically, they have to nap.
They have to process.
It's very unique.
Yeah. They have to take the time to process it before they can really talk about
it. Absolutely. Yeah. So again, meeting them where they are, and then trying to move them forward and doing a lot of educational work. So making sure this person knows what HIV means today. And then once they get empowered with that information, it tends to look a lot different. So they're not, feeling so, disempowered.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of people get to a point where they feel like they can have a healthy sex life and they can have relationships again. There are still people, we did talk about this that night, but there are still people that struggle with it, but they're usually the people that maybe already struggle with things in life, right?
Absolutely.
Maybe they already maybe struggled with depression. So that's just add insult to injury, right?
Yes. So
you can live with HIV and still have a happy life.
Yeah, because studies, again, I love studies, but
that's important. Me too. We were big fans.
It says that you're going to
live, read them.
As long as everybody else. So if you take your medicine, eat healthy, do the things that you should do. Now, if you do unhealthy things get drunk and walk in traffic or whatnot, you're going to die immediately, just
That's
like
true.
Everybody else. Yeah. So, it's important to make healthy decisions if you want to live longer. Also, sometimes people who are HIV positive, they tend to live longer than people who are HIV negative because they're engaged in healthcare already. Mm-hmm. They say that men don't go to the doctor, they go to the emergency room.
So they have a diagnosis.
They have to be broken and like flapping around.
Yeah, they say the same thing about people.
And still be inconvenient.
With lots of different disabilities, like any back problems or chronic like arthritis.
Yeah,
like,
when a man gets a diagnosis, he ends up taking care of himself a little better. So absolutely. It makes sense.
Something brings him in.
See, guys, you need to take care of yourselves. Yeah.
Okay.
That's why actually men live longer when they're married, too, because we're like, go to the doctor. Uh-huh. You need to do this.
So you know. Vegetables. So you know I'm never going to die.
He will never die. He's going to live forever. I make him eat healthy. We exercise.
So what's the future for HIV prevention?
So the future is something very promising and exciting. It's called the injectables are coming. And what that is. Yes. And so basically somebody who's HIV positive, what they could do is they could go to the doctor and get a shot in the arm every 8 weeks. And then they're, you know, have their HIV under arrest, you know, or controlled, whatever you want to call it. And then the same technology is now being researched. It's in the third phase trial for injectables for PrEP. So this means that people can go and get a shot in the arm, and then every 8 weeks they're, you know,
instead of a pill every day.
Yeah. Because treatment compliance, what they call it. So sometimes people who are positive have barriers, people who are negative have barriers, and, you know, people with a strep throat sometimes don't finish all their, you know, 10 pills or whatever. So sometimes, you know, we need to have other things in place.
People get distracted. They forget.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So if you can just give somebody a shot in the arm every 8 weeks, then hopefully
they're set.
It'll be like, you know, diabetic stuff to where you can maybe do it at home. That's what I'm hoping for.
Oh, wow.
And then just give yourself a little shot in the arm and then you're going to be protected.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would work.
That's amazing. So we've come a long way.
Yes, a long way.
So we were talking about testing earlier. What if somebody doesn't have health insurance and they don't have the money to get tested? Good question. They do?
So they can come to us and we offer free testing.
How can they get a hold of you?
They can call 314-645-6451 and then ask
they
to
get
speak
free
with
testing.
Matthew. Yes, free testing. We also do free treatment.
What's the company name so people know?
St. Louis Effort for AIDS. And you could also go to Planned Parenthood. Another funny story is I was, you know, doing a talk on a panel last week and people were handing out cards outside. They were the protesters, you know, the sexual
They're
protesters.
Popular around here.
Yes, they are.
Protests.
And I was, and then somebody raised their hand and they said, I won't mention the organization, but they said, what about this organization? And I didn't know that it was a plant from that organization because they were probably like 19 years old or something. And they said, what about this organization? I said, well, that organization shames people. And they have a commercial on television here in the St. Louis area that says, you know, come get tested. And they don't, you know, judge me. I went there and I had such a great experience. But that's not the experience that we hear whenever we hear people in our office.
What is the experience you hear?
So what we hear is people being shamed for having sex and shamed for sexual behavior. If somebody has sexually transmitted infection, then they're shamed for that. It's religious based is what it is.
Well, you can say the name of the company.
Yes. It's,
I'm okay with it.
It's okay.
It's Thrive.
Thrive. So, we already talked about
them. We already talk about them. We already shamed them.
Okay, good.
Yeah, Thrive. We had somebody on to talk about Thrive who's trying to get them out of the schools right
now. Yeah, and so she's getting a lot of political clout right now for talking about the In God We Trust stuff.
Yeah, but that's not sex.
But that's not what we're talking about. It's just interesting.
And we know, so we know that shaming and doing all those things, like that increases HIV transmission. The fear-based messaging, that also increases HIV and sexually transmitted infections. And I mean, for me personally, I don't know how morally it can happen because what they'll do is they'll stand outside of Planned Parenthood with a clipboard and say, oh, well, your appointment's been moved right down the road to our mobile unit. And then so they'll trick people who are trying to go get help at Planned Parenthood to go to their place about a block and a half down the road.
That should be considered kidnapping.
That's kind of illegal, isn't it?
They do it. And then once you show up, then they hand you a bunch of religious literature and try to suck you in to doing what
they
want you to do.
Don't they know that that doesn't work, though? Like, if anything, it just makes people mad at you and hate you even more.
It does.
The reality is,
like, if I didn't hate you, I would hate you at that point.
Yeah.
Like, right now I'm neutral, but now that you've shamed me.
Yep. And then people a lot of
times. Well, here's the reality is it shuts people down.
It does.
Like, if they were going there to try to get an abortion or to get tested, they get. If they get lampooned like that or protesters out there, a lot of times they just won't go.
Yeah.
Because they're scared of that conflict, of that abuse and that shame. Yeah. They don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
So it does work, yeah. unfortunately, yeah. and because they're assholes. That's why it works.
Yeah.
So shame and fear-based education yeah. or programs of any sort are harmful.
But anyway, let's not talk about that.
No, I know.
I need to clean my palate.
No, I just want to make sure people know. No, like more comprehensive education,
yeah.
more facts, more help. Those are the things that actually help prevent STIs yes. and pregnancies. Right, yes. Shame and fear-based programming actually increases
Correct.
STDs yeah. and teen Correct. Pregnancies because people don't make smart decisions
yes.
and they don't know how to yes. make smart decisions.
Correct. And the research is there for that too. So yeah. it shows.
I know. That, I've seen yeah. it.
She okay. loves her research.
I love research yeah. too. Yeah, high five for research. Oh,
woo! High five.
Information.
Yay. Yeah. Reality.
I know, yeah. right?
We like to live in reality here.
It's new. It's yeah. really important.
It's not fake it's news or fake research. No.
Yep. We live in reality.
Well, reality.
I think that's all we got to cover, unless Perfect. You have anything else you want to say.
That's it. Go get tested and mm-hmm. happy sex lives.
Yeah. yeah. So this has been the About Sex podcast.
Oh, before we go, I always do my plugs, baby.
yeah.
So if you want to see a therapist real quick, then it's am I doing it wrong? Sorry, babe.
You so are.
It's www.therapistinst.com. Go ahead, finish your thing. I totally screwed
We've
it up.
We've been talking with Matthew Swango. Be sure to add us on Facebook, review us on iTunes, or send us some questions at aboutsexpodcast@gmail.com. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I'm a therapist. I already told you guys.
Oh, you're a therapist, are you?
And also, I forgot where I put my plug. So sorry, guys. But the other plug that I have, in addition, so I have my book out, Helping you're Couples fine. Overcome Infidelity. You can get that on Amazon. And I have a really cool webinar coming up with aamft.org. Mm-hmm. And it is called Alternative Lifestyles, How to Approach Kinky and Polyamorous Clients in Therapy. And so mm-hmm. you can join me later this next month for my 102 class. I actually already did a 101 class mm-hmm. that's already
it was very
up that
popular.
People it was so popular they brought me back
and
for
they're
an advanced
more.
Yes they are. And so I'm doing an advanced class with them if you
that's
guys
awesome.
Are interested. Okay.
Good
and
job.
Yeah.
Who are you?
I'm Angela Skirtu, a St.
Louis
marriage therapy.
Stay
kinky, St. Louis.